Hello, and welcome to Life Beyond the Numbers, the podcast for people who are curious about how to have a more fulfilling work life. We live in a world largely driven by numbers, logic, and reason. But how we feel at work and about our work impacts us, our organizations, and society. There is a relationship between the numbers of our organizations and the life beyond the numbers. I'm Susan Mikhrylon, your host. I've lived and worked in many countries. I've met people who love what they do and people who don't, people who bring their full selves to work and people who won't. But one thing that I've learned that is common to us all is that we are all unique and have unique experiences. And it's helpful to know that there are others who think like we do, or have had struggles too, or have gone where we want to go, or can show us things we didn't know. So join me and my guests as we place a lens on the human side of work life by sharing insights, stories, and strategies to inspire you to let your uniqueness shine. Well, today I am delighted to welcome Nathan Simmons to Life Beyond the Numbers. Nathan, you're so welcome.
Thank you for having me. I feel very welcomed already. I'm going to have to say, we've already been chatting for a few minutes and just laughing and going, oh my God. So we have no idea where this journey is going to go right now.
Isn't that fantastic? I just love that. Yeah. I was getting into this conversation. I was like, I wish... recording. But never mind. We will go where we go now. Yes. And first of all, I want to give a shout out to Karina Rook, who introduced me to Nathan. And Karina was just a couple of episodes ago, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Thank you, Karina, because I know you listen.
Thank you.
So, Nathan, a couple of things stood out when I looked at your profile, as they always do, because people are fascinating, I firmly believe, and everybody has these great stories. And your story really struck me. I'm not going to give it away.
Yep.
But what I am going to say is what you said about in life, there are two kinds of challenges, the ones that hold us back and the ones we deliberately embrace for what they truly are and what they truly make us. And that's a great distinction. And I'd love to hear more about how you got there with that.
Yeah. Everything that I have ever done as a child has always been to challenge the status quo, to push a boundary, to prove a point, to be stubborn, to irritate someone all my life. And it hasn't done me many favors at different points. You're laughing because you know it's true for yourself as well. Yeah, I was the kid that when my mum would say, if you keep pulling that face, if the wind changes, your face will stay like that. So I would sit there like pulling that stupid face, waiting for the wind change. Come at me. So like, seriously, what else have you got? And it was constantly doing this. And part of that was naturally who I am. Part of it was my dad, although he was a police officer, had kind of challenges with authority. He was always trying to push the boundaries with the courts, etc., to prove a point. And he kind of taught me to have the last word and be right, which also doesn't really do yourself any favors in the career market of how to get promoted and stuff when you're trying to go out there and be like this. So I hit a lot of frictions and tensions with this. And I struggled at school from a very, very early age. I didn't enjoy the school dynamic. Something was missing, always felt like a square peg in a round hole. And I've always felt like that. And then as I got older, I was about 9 years old. And I had abdominal pains. Standard procedure. I ended up in hospital. I had appendicitis. So very standard procedure for a very routine situation. And I was in and out of hospital very, very quickly. Perforated appendix. But then the pain didn't go away and it continued. So I spent the next few months going backwards and forwards from hospital. And I was very lucky. We went to the doctor's surgery one day because this hadn't changed. I said, oh, you've got trapped wind. It's just wind pains, blah, blah, blah. went into the GPs. There was a locum doctor there that wasn't my normal doctor, but we'd known him. And he just took one look at me and said, "You've got Crohn's disease. You need to go to the hospital, get 2 pints of blood put back in you." And this was in the late 80s. And I say I was lucky because in the 80s, it was only perceived that young prepubescent girls got Crohn's disease at this point. It was a female hormonal thing. So there I am, late 80s, suddenly with this diagnosis. I'm one of the first cases they've seen in it at that age in the hospital. So basically, I was a bit of an experiment in that sense. So I had bowel resection, I had an abscess on it, I had pipes in my jugular veins, I had all sorts of things going on. I spent almost a year in hospital going backwards and forwards, overcoming this. My mum did a lot of research though. And it's the 80s, it wasn't Google. My mum was more powerful than Google at this point. So she's at the health food shop and she's finding out about different remedies, different foods, allergy testing, all of this stuff. And we found an amazing allergy test, a kinesiologist and reflexologist. And we treated the root cause of the Crohn's, not the actual Crohn's. And within 2 years, it was cured. I haven't had a flare-up since. I don't medicate. And I'm now 46. But I didn't learn the lessons. And what the lesson I was actually learning at that time was about compassion. It's about how to be compassionate to myself. So a few years later, I'm walking home, 12, 13 years old. And I'm 6'6", so I'm 2 foot taller than everybody else. So I'm quite a tall guy. I'm walking home and this group of boys from another school decide to make sport with me. And they decide to make me the brunt of their frustrations. And what started as verbal abuse and spitting turned to physical violence. And it was utterly terrifying. And it might have been 6 months, 8 months, I don't know, but it was terrifying. And eventually what would happen is I would walk the long way home and I'd run the last 10, 20 minutes so that I'd arrive home at the same time so no one would notice that anything was wrong. But I couldn't tell my brother because my brother was the toughest kid in school. And he was so tough that at 16, he got expelled for fighting with the headmaster. So kind of next level stuff, you know, it's not like your run-of-the-mill kind of stuff going on. And then my dad was a policeman. I couldn't tell him. But I felt that if I told them, I would have been less of a man at 12, 13 years old. So it's constantly meeting these challenges and these tensions. It's like, okay, what did I actually need? I needed someone there to challenge me. I needed to challenge myself. I didn't have that in me. I didn't have that wherewithal at that age. So what did I do? And I really understood this quote that I learned later on in life from Dr. Sandra Wilson is hurt people hurt people. So everything that I didn't know what to do with, I then gave it to someone else and I became a bully. Because if you want to stop people bullying you, you need to get a bigger reputation yourself in order to get yourself up the pecking order to stop people pecking on you. So I just perpetuated the cycle. But then 10 years later, I'm lying on a grotty sofa in the back end of Elephant and Castle somewhere, and I've just overdosed on recreational drugs and taken 16 ecstasy tablets and sniffed over 5 grams of coke in one night. But it's the same mentality. It's the same energy that destroys you, that builds you. I was pushing myself to these extreme limits and I just traveled the world. Now I've been to Australia and Thailand, done these fantastic things and had these amazing experiences, but there was just something that just was so out of kilter, so wrong inside of me psychologically, felt wrong at that time, that I was using that energy to create, to challenge myself to new depths of depravity and self-degradation in order to prove myself in some way, shape or form. But I knew, again, that's not where I was meant to be. I had a cocaine deal on the table that I could have bought into, and it's not the ideal. It's not your first choice of preferences for stocks that you want to get into. I mean, it's fairly lucrative. We've seen that, but it's not a healthy choice. So I've got this, and then other things are falling down around me, and I'm just like, I'm either going to be dead or in prison. What do I want to do here? And in that moment, I made a split decision, stopped everything. All the drugs stopped. I severed all the relationships in that moment. And just, I knew I was there standing on the edge of that metaphorical precipice looking over, going, this is not what I'm meant for. And my whole life just fell apart. It's constantly seeing these moments. And I had some of the tools. I had some of the understanding. I'd learned a little bit of psychotherapy. I'd learned a little bit of spirituality. I was curious about this. I knew there was something else going on, but I just didn't have the building blocks. But actually, these events were becoming the building blocks. They were becoming the, in one of my teachers calls them graduation events. It's like, did you actually learn the lesson? Did you have all the right tools? Did you put the tools in place at the right time? Did you have the necessary friction in order to move forward? And this is where this challenge comes from. It's like, okay, I can either embrace a challenge, I can either look at the next obstacle, knowing that I have the skill set to meet it, because you wouldn't have that obstacle if you didn't have the skill set. It's like a computer game. Very, very few computer games start with the hardest level first and then get easier. Most of them start really easy, and then you build yourself up. You get the XP, you get the understanding of the game mechanics, you get the plus 20 orc slaying sword and the laser gun, and da da da. And you get all these things. And then you go, I've got the skills, I've got the tools, I can meet this challenge. The universe will not give you more than you can handle. So then you can meet that and you can embrace it. But most people don't see it as a computer game. They'll spend more time on their Nintendo DS or whatever they're playing, doing the same level on Lego Star Wars or Harry Potter or whatever. And they'll do it 150, 200, 300 times. But you come back to reality and you hit the same challenge and you go, oh, God, I'm not good enough for that. And you'll stop doing it. And then you wonder why anxiety or depression and all these things build up and addiction build up. There's that thing that's waiting for you to embrace it. It's ready for you. You have the skill set. You are ready already. It's time to step into that. Because if you step out of it, it's that phrase like, the devil makes work for idle hands. Kinda. It's going to give you the stuff to keep you. Just look over here, look over here. You're not playing at your full potential. And if you realize that, that's going to be really unhealthy. You might do something stupid. So we're going to keep you drunk, numbed out, self-medicated, self-anesthetized. So we do that rather than that. So this is where we have to have that challenge because, like me, I can either focus my energy onto challenging myself to be a better human being, learning more, understanding human dynamics, human psychology, where my challenges are, or you can put a massive bag of cocaine in front of me and I'll destroy myself. This is the challenge. It's like, okay, which one do I want to move through?
Wow, that was not the answer I was expecting when I asked that question. Thank you. Thank you for your candor and your reflections as well. And there was a couple of things that struck me. I suppose at 13, 14, when you were being bullied and you couldn't tell your dad, you couldn't tell your brother, and you felt less of a man. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean anything to me because I don't know what that means, but I think that's a very interesting phrase. And where did that understanding or that feeling come from, Nathan? That at that stage, that was more important to you, perhaps, than anything else.
For me, I think there's a couple of answers to it. One is you're just saving face. You're just showing up. You're trying to present a persona to keep your head above water, or I did, in a space that is alien. Children get put into schools, and you're there with 150 children of the same age normally. And the only reference you've got is kids of other ages and their little units, and then teachers. And it's like your map of the world is based on whether you've got the new Nike Air Max or whatever, or how big your breasts are, or how many pubic hairs you got. I mean, let's be frank, this is what we talk about as kids. So you're trying to save grace that you didn't get beaten up by somebody older than you. And yeah, you've snogged a girl and you're trying to do all these things. And then to admit that there's some sort of weakness that you would be less than, that you got beaten up or something happened or you didn't snog that girl or whatever, that you'll be less of a man. But what the fuck map do you have of masculinity in a society that's been perpetuating that for centuries? And your only reference point is your dad, and they've got their own challenges in the nicest possible way. That poem of your parents, they fuck you up, they did, and all of that, whatever the line. And
That did, yeah.
they've got their stuff going on. Your older brothers and sisters have got their stuff going on. It's just like, so I'm stuck in the middle here. Whatever I do or say, if I tell my friends I'm less than, if I tell my brother I'm less than, if I tell my dad I'm less than. So you do nothing other than perpetuate where you're going. But it's just this idea that you've got to maintain that persona based on the persona that someone else has given you. And for me, with a lot of my work that came in over the last 3 years, is these building blocks of childhood psychology and dynamics and relationships, etc., is we get given a faulty map of the world by people that don't even know how to navigate. And then we spend most of our lives wandering around, scratching our heads, wondering why the fuck we're lost. And I forgot to ask if it's okay to swear on your show. It's a bit
Well, it's a
late
bit
now.
late now, isn't it?
But but this is where we are. Like, we wander around going, well, I feel like there's something else I'm here to do, but I've got to pay the bills. So I'm going to work in this call center, or I'm going to do this or whatever, because no one's ever shown me anything different other than this life that we've been led to believe that we have to. So we just play these games and we struggle through it. And like our parents, they have their own challenges, absent fathers and irresponsible masculinity, toxic masculinity, whatever, you know, absent masculinity, more to the point. It's like, well, how are we supposed to show up in the world when we don't have elders, when we don't have role models, when we don't have actual leaders and people that know how to do it? This now is where we are. Is I'm able to look back in reflection to those moments and see those younger versions of me and go, it's, you know what, it's okay, it's done, it's over, we've got another option.
And like you said, it was the obstacle, and the obstacle is the way, which I think that comes from the Greek philosophers or whatever. But there's an identity as well, isn't there, about what it means to be a man.
Yep.
That I guess can be different for every single man as well, but there are some commonalities, as I say, for women, there are some things that our society expects of us, and yep, the construct that society has around our identities. But one of the other things that came up as you were talking was this book I've read recently, The Great Work of Your Life by Stephen Cope, and it's a really interesting book. Is that lots of us get to these crossroads, and I think that's what you were talking about, the precipice in a way was a crossroads as, yeah, well, or these obstacles, they're all crossroads, and some of us just take our armchair and sit at those crossroads and stay, yeah, there for the rest of our lives, imprisoned by, yeah, which direction do I go in. And I loved the imagery of you sitting there. It's not a metaphor because it happened, but actually sitting there at that table, and I can go right now and do the drug deal, or I can go left and be dead. What am I going to do here? And that to me is personal responsibility. And that is something I think we're never taught.
So this is, I love that, because you've kind of dropped, this is one of the things that I share with people, and it's still, we get recalibration on our language because the language is so powerful, is when we look at things like addictive patterns, we look at our relationships, the things that we get ourselves into, our job relationships and who we work for and who we marry and all of these things. None of it's a choice. Addiction isn't a choice. No one wakes up in the morning and goes, you know what, today I'm going to smoke a load of crack. That's going to, you know, no.
And keep it up for the next like 27 years.
Yeah, and keep it up for 27 years. Or today, do you know what, I'm going to go in and make my boss's life a misery. That's perfect. I'm glad I'll get paid for doing this. No, none of it is a choice. It's an addictive pattern. It's a safety mechanism. You know, it's not your ability to respond, is what they talk about, that responsibility. We don't have any. We don't have any ability to respond because it's been taken away from us through our childhood and developmental traumas and our early experiences and the things that we were taught about ourselves by people that don't even know themselves. But this is then what happens, is rather than responding, we end up reacting. And what we're actually doing is reacting the past moment in the present, which stops us from creating the future. So everything that we're doing, these interactions, they are just things on a carousel. This is your safety mechanism. This is how you know how the world works. These are the boundaries in which we know how to play to give you some sense of safety, to give you a sense of certainty. So in those moments when we have, as Samuel L. Jackson referred to in Pulp Fiction, moments of clarity, alcoholics refer to it as a moment of clarity. It's just like, oh my God, like we see it. And it's just like, this is not what I'm here for. There's that nudge, that whisper that's so freaking loud. That's our intuition. That's our higher self saying, not today. But because we've been taught and trained to ignore our intuition, it's one of the first things that we lose when we experience trauma. And many people don't realize this is the first thing. There you are, 2-3 years old or whatever, and you decide you want to see what orange crayon looks like on the floor or wallpaper, and you're just expressing your creativity as a small child. But then your mom is premenstrual, just got a bill from the phone shop, doesn't know how to pay it, had an argument with your dad, whatever, da da da, and she goes apoplectic on fucking full postal screaming at you. And the 2-3-year-old has no concept of what the hell's going on here. This is the divine feminine. This is God, like one half of God here. And I was just expressing my creativity and it was met with that. Okay, I can't trust the voice in my head that said to explore myself. And I speak to these people 20 years later, 30 years later, and then they're, yeah, but I'm not creative. In our traumatic moments, we learn to ignore the intuition, the inner voice, the deep wisdom that comes from within who we are completely. Until we get to those testing moments and we are pushed so far out of alignment, it's like, this isn't you. What do you want to do with this? What do you want to do with this piece of information, right? But in that point, you have a moment of discernment. And you can either carry on going down that road, and you hear them say that, and we know where that road goes. Or you can make a decision here. And you were saying before that it was difficult to do that, it was hard to do that, and that's your ego speaking, and you shouldn't do that, because your ego's there just to keep you safe. And your ego's encouraging you to sniff coke, it's encouraging you to drink vodka, it's encouraging you to screw your secretary and do all of these things, all these toxic behaviors. But it's doing all of that because it loves you. It doesn't want you to feel like you did when it first showed up in your life. So it gives you all these habits and behaviors to keep you distracted, because it you can't live in that state of fear or that state of worry and concern. So you build up all these toxic habits in order to keep you safe, which are actually corroding you from the inside out. Autoimmune disorder, drink problems, relationship challenges, all of this stuff is stress related. So when we see that, it's like, oh, my ego's doing this to keep me safe. It's doing it because it loves me, not because I'm a fucking idiot. Oh, my God. Okay, cool. You know, I mean, this is like these choices of words that I've used about myself at times. And it's like, I see it for what it is. It's like, right, you love me. Thank you very much. Okay. But the challenge with the ego when it's doing these things, it's working on an operating procedure that was written by a three-year-old. It still thinks you're 3 years old and being shouted at by your mum for drawing on the wallpaper. Doesn't know you've grown up. So when it starts to realize this, it's like, hold on a minute, you can be an adult. In that moment, that juncture for me, the higher self stepped in, cut through everything, didn't even circumvent it. It just went straight through and went, you've got a choice, do this. Okay, that's obvious. Okay, this is what I'm paying for. And all of a sudden, the hard work becomes very easy. So when we make that choice, it appears hard according to the ego, but the decision's really easy.
Totally. And I think that's one of the most fascinating things, actually, is you can make a decision that this is it. It's enough or whatever. Or like you did, I choose life and I choose living fully and finding out what my purpose is. And then you can stop all of those other behaviors that were dragging you in the wrong way, or the way that you wasn't your way. I'm not going to say the wrong way, but the way that wasn't really your way. And I think it brings me to let's sit down and talk about it, because we do tend to sit down and spend a lot of our lives are taken up talking about how we could do this better, or talking about why do we make these choices, or just talking.
Yeah.
And there are other ways of cutting through that noise, because not all of us get to that precipice and hear that nudge and whisper. And I'd like to hear about what you do in that realm.
Mm. The one thing that keeps bubbling up before I get to that is one of the challenges that men have is we fucking glamorize it. And it's fucking septic within itself. And this quote, and I shared a post on this on LinkedIn, is that whole quote about, oh, to make wine, you have to crush a grape, and to make olive oil, you have to squeeze them, and to make diamonds, you need pressure. Actually, that's just abuse. Like, to pressurize me, to stress me out so that actually my what was before had to die in that, that's abuse. Let's not glamorize these things. We don't have to go through these challenging points in order to experience growth. The challenge is that we believe we have to. It's so indoctrinated into us that how, you know, never in the history of stop smoking has anyone actually stopped smoking because someone else told them to. It doesn't happen.
Doctors, no matter what they tell us.
Yeah.
We have to make a choice ourselves. Yeah. We have to wake up to that.
Yeah, we have to find that ability to respond in order to step through it. I'm telling everyone, I was like, well, stunt your growth. So I smoke more to prove a point. You know, we can't do that. We've got to stop celebrating that, oh yeah, you're great, you've overcome all this adversity, and here, have some more adversity, and if you don't come through this adversity, obviously you're not resilient enough, so here, have a resilience training and let's shovel some more shit onto you. Like, from this sense of, oh, I haven't had enough adversity, I haven't had enough problems in my life, and I'm not good enough to like, come on people, like, take a breath. And this is really what it is when I'm doing this work, it is the first thing is to take a breath. And it's to start getting really honest. So there's a couple of elements to my business and what I do with the leadership space. It's really practical, pragmatic approaches, giving people cerebral tools, the understanding, not just, I talk about foundational advanced coaching and leadership skills. And everyone talks about open questions and rapport building and stuff like that. Yeah, but how many people teach the nuance of the psychology of the language that breaks us down and holds us back, and how not all questions are made equal, and actually the wrong word here can actually agitate and irritate a relationship and break it, and you don't even realize you're doing it. Yeah, all of these things. So it's giving people the practical cerebral tools so they can stop being a pleb and a whatever else at work. And then they're wondering, well, it's everyone else's problem, it's not my problem. Well, what's the common denominator in all your problems? Okay, let's own that and hold it with love, without shame, with some appreciation that these things have been happening to keep you safe, and it's all part of the fantastic mechanisms and coping strategies of your ego. Cool. And embrace all of that and explore why your psyche does what it does, why, what fear is, the truth about trauma, the psychodynamics of relationships using psychotherapy models, not leadership models. Looking at the interplay and how people are asking you to show up and how you're asking them to show up and how actually you're just asking them to be a character in your story and vice versa. And then you wonder why you had three marriages and da-da-da-da and all of these things. And it's just like, let's talk about that stuff. Let's talk about why the brain does what it does in order to protect you. But then that's the cerebral conscious work. And we're starting to touch into the subconscious work here. Because then what I do is not just standing in classrooms teaching this stuff, is then dipping into the hypnotherapy. And the hypnotherapy is really rich for this. First people to go, oh, can you make me cluck like a chicken? It's like, no, this is not hypnotherapy. This is stage hypnotism. Like, yeah, no, I'm not even going to do any like rubbish jokes about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then the other part is, oh, you can help me stop smoking. Yeah, but that's not all that hypnotherapy is for. So predominantly with the hypnotherapy style that I do, which is called free mind, 80-90% inner child work, inner child healing, inner child trauma. And when we use that sort of language for people, people can become quite intimidated. Why? Because they've got this whole construct of their identity. And if you start prodding around in that house of cards is going to fall down. We don't want to do that. Ego starts to have a few things to say about it, and it will do everything it can to push me away. But it's not about getting rid of your ego. It's about actually building a better relationship with your ego. And having a conversation with yourself in a way that nobody else ever did. When I do hypnotherapy with people, is we're not taking you back to relive the experience. I'm taking you back to speak to the younger version of yourself so you can be the parent you wished you had in that moment. Take the pressure off, speak your truth. Stop pushing the emotions down, let the emotions move through you, and let that child come back to life in you with the gifts, the creativity, the spontaneity, the humor, the joy, the whatever that was pushed away into shadow because it wasn't safe to be those things. Because so many people speak to it, I was told I was too much, I was too happy, I was too excited, I was too joyful, I was too sad, da, da, da. It's too much. It's like, and then you settle for less because it's safer. So in these moments, when we use the hypnotherapy, we can start talking to these parts. Now, inner child work, I only ever do one-to-one because it's super personal, super deep. In the group dynamic, though, what you can do is you can start looking at belief structures. So in the human psyche, there is hundreds and thousands of personality types, different archetypes, different ways of being. There's Susan the baker, Susan the bank robber, the king, the queen, all these things, male, female archetypes, all in there. But in even one-to-one or in a group dynamic, you can then speak to the group to understand what their limiting beliefs are. And you can get them to have a conversation inside their own head with that part of their mind that is responsible for that limited belief, and completely shift the narrative, put down one belief, encode another one, and feel it viscerally. So we get this visceral feeling of, what does joy actually feel like? when I think about that moment where my child was born, or when I accomplished that thing, or climbed that mountain, whatever it was, overcome that obstacle, how did that feel? Pride. Where do you feel that in your body? Here or here or here or whatever it is. It's like, okay, cool, let's expand that. Well, using that to find people's values and how they can bring more of that to work. So it's not just words on walls and, you know, bullshit fucking prints that aren't worth the paper they're printed on. Oh, Suzanne, like, I think you need to be more courageous today. I think you need to show a bit more courage. It's like, well, what the fuck does that actually mean? Whereas actually, if you have a reference for what courage means to you, in a moment, it's like, I know what that means, and I'm going to bring that to my job on a daily basis. I can embody that. That is an experience I understand. It's a lived experience. It's experiential, so that I can show up with more of that. So we can start rewiring those belief structures, but then we start getting a little bit squirrely with it when we do the values mapping. So the next stage with the hypnotherapy part in the leadership space is then doing values mapping, where we use hypnotic suggestion. We take the group in to explore what their values are, to explore what the business's values are. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to the business? What are the values of the business? So rather than it just being those words or walls, it's a joint consensus. It's a joint experience where everyone's dropped into that. They know what it feels like viscerally. What's important to them? What's important? Okay, cool. Let's map that out. So that when we speak to someone, whether it's the CEO, SLT, team leader, it's like, what does courage mean to you? Well, this is what courage means to me. And this is what I bring every day to make a difference. And then all of a sudden, your job becomes a hell of a lot more fulfilling, because it is full and filling at the same time. It's a lot more purposeful. And it is really understanding that. I'll probably break that down in a second. But then the next stage we can do with the hypnotherapy, which are not a lot of people talk about, which is where, in both emotional, spiritual, and financial sense of the word, is where the gold is we can do a thing called a future progression. Now, everyone talks about regression work. We go back in time. We go and speak to the inner child. We go and speak to our younger selves. We go back and do all of these things or whatever. Or we can do past life regression. And then there are some people out there that do the life between lives. So you can go to the spirit realm. You can, yeah, really interesting stuff, like massive number of case studies on this. So it's not just woo-woo. It's like tangible, quantifiable research done on this. That's regression work. But progression work is where you can then set your values, you can create a powerful maxim with which your purpose for your business, and then based on that intention and focus, take the subconscious mind a year, 5 years, 10 years into the future, and then look back to see what the challenges were that you've overcome, to see what the challenges were that are coming downstream, to see how you solved them. So it might be that you have a problem in your business right now. You can take the subconscious mind a year into the future to a point where you've solved the problem, and you can see how you did it in order to create the solution. Einstein said you can't solve a problem with the same level of consciousness that created it. So when we do this, we're using the power of the subconscious mind, the power of the imagination, which he said was more powerful than just intellect, to create solutions, to see what the world looks like. What does our business look like in 5 years' time? What difference have we made? Who have we helped? What's happening to the kids of the people that work in the business? What's happening to the kids and the kids of the suppliers to the business? How have we made a difference? How have we left things better than we found it? And are we really fulfilled in that, or is there something else we need to do? And this, for me, when we get into that power of hypnotherapy, this is where the magic is. It's like, yeah, we can rewire the limited beliefs. Yeah, we can change the structures. Yes, we can dissolve the self-sabotage and create something more purposeful and wise and sage and all of those things. Where do we want to take that? What does the future look like? And this is what's important.
Absolutely. And I love that, because thinking about your future and actually putting yourself, your future self, I think it's something that we find very hard to do. So for example, when it comes to pensions and things, they say, whoever they are, that if we could visualize ourselves as a pensioner, then we would be more likely to save our pension, because we would want to look after that person we're becoming. And the other thing, I suppose, is in the present, we're using the past always to inform the future anyway. And because we've overcome so many things in our lives, they're just embedded in us. We're not even conscious of some of the things that we're capable of. In fact, I think we're not conscious of many things we're capable of.
Yep.
And so I love the focus on the future. There's something very hopeful about that, Nathan. There's something much more empowering about actually, it's not just looking back to fix things. And I don't think we're fixing anyway. That's not the right term, but that's the way we look at it. I need to fix myself to move forward. Yep. When actually we have everything we need inside of ourselves. We just need to free it somehow.
Correct. But this is the thing is, if the moment you're saying that you need fixing, what you're actually saying is you're broken. And so when we're creating our future, Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about this, your personality creates your personal reality. Your current present is made by your past and your near experiences and your understanding and the labels and the ascribed meaning and all of those things have created this moment now. So we don't have future data. We don't have anything other than everything that's led up to this moment. But what's been happening is your ego has perpetuated those relationships over and over again. That's why we end up in the same relationship with a different person. It's why we end up in a different job, same boss. More often than not, though, we end up working for a mum or dad, though, and they end up being like mum with like our parents. So actually, when you start to look at the family dynamics at work, it starts to get really interesting. So what we need to then do, though, is rather than trying to create tomorrow based on all the clutter and the stuff that has and hasn't worked, okay, cool, we need to rewire to a future possibility. Now, what happens is when we go into that future possibility, whatever you believe or don't believe, doesn't matter. Biologically, your brain doesn't know what's real or imagined anyway. So what happens is we go into the future. Oh, I've got this future. You know, everyone talks about the proverbial, I'm going to write myself a check for $1 million and I'm going to law of attraction. It's all shit. It doesn't work like that in the majority. Yeah. Because if you write yourself a check, you know, it's a lie anyway, because it's to myself. It's like, well, where did the $1 million come from anyway? There's a reprogramming of this. We don't have, though, a frame of reference for what it feels like to have $1 million in our bank account or £1 million or whatever. We don't have that frame of correlation. What we know is we haven't got that and we've never been able to get it. So we're constantly building our data set on what we have experienced in this brain frequency. So we go to the future progression and we create a memory of an experience that's yet to be had. We're not just going, I'm going to be a millionaire. No, it doesn't work like this, yeah? We create that memory. We have a visceral sensation. What does it feel like to have that? What have I done to achieve that? What challenges have I overcome? Who am I helping as a result of it, which has created that? Now, how am I being of service and living in purpose and all of those things to create that? And we start to feel that, like it feels like this. £1 million smells like this. All of that stuff. And we have all those sensations which give us an understanding. Okay, we've got that. And then we know it's a roadmap. We can see the challenges. We can start putting the tangible, okay, if I do this, okay, cool. And then we come back to this moment. And yes, there's that challenge of where we open our eyes and we drop back into, and we look around and we're like, oh. It's not all it's fucking cracked up to be. I've just come back to this reality. I was time traveling over here to this possibility. And now I've come back to this and it's exactly the same. And then we drop into that frustration again. It's like, hold on a minute. We have to, and what they call is a Newtonian to quantum transition. So this is when we get into kind of law of attraction work, is it's the distance between the physical world, you putting an order in with the restaurant of the universe and actually getting your delivery back. Yeah, but most people are like, it's not good enough. And they go straight back into the rage and the upset and the frustration. Life hasn't changed. Well, if you're going to turn a cruise liner around, you don't just yank up the handbrake and it's going to take time to turn around. It's going to take time to change direction. It's going to take time, but you're doing that. But you've got this with the hypnotherapy is better because you're creating this tangible list of activities that, you know, okay, tomorrow I do this and I'm one step closer, because we then get into the law of action, which is then the universe will respond in kind to what it is you're putting in the world. And this going with that psychology, what is it I'm putting into the world? What do I believe about myself? What do I believe about other people? What do I believe about work? What do I believe I'm capable of? What you think of yourself is what you will achieve.
Which is exactly where I wanted to go to now, because earlier on in the episode, you talked about how as kids, we were told we were too this or too that, too much, too emotional, too boring, too whatever. And because of that, many of us make our lives too small.
Yep.
And we're capable of so much, we just don't know it, which is such a shame, I think. So this is what you're getting to here, I think. This is a way of tapping into removing these twos.
Yep.
To actually live into your purpose, live on purpose, live in purpose, and so
yep.
on.
Yeah, and be deliberate.
Be deliberate and
not,
practice it, because that's the other thing. It's like running a marathon, isn't it? You're not going to go out and just run a marathon. Well, I certainly couldn't fall after 5 miles or whatever. You have to build that up and you have to keep going and setting the intention. It's a formula in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, depending on how long your life is, and it's not about whether or not it's the decisions are hard or it's difficult, because again, that's your ego talking. You're going to have to understand and appreciate and be grateful for what has got you to where you are now. And making some of those adjustments might take a little bit of time to sort out. For example, if your relationship isn't right and you need to divorce your partner and you need to change a house, like selling a house doesn't just happen overnight. You're going to have to work those things through, but you're doing it from a new level of self-awareness, of self-belief, of self-esteem. And you build that muscle. And yeah, sometimes it's going to be triggering. But this is one of the key mantras with my work. What triggers you externally is what needs to be worked on internally. If someone or something pisses you off, what part of me is feeling that? Because what people do is they get so hooked up on their identity. It's like, I am angry, I am happy, I am anxious, I am depressed, I am
I'm
this.
The type of person that.
Yeah. And it's, you're not any of those things. You are a person experiencing the symptoms or the behaviors or the whatever of anxiety, of depression, of happiness. Okay, what needs to change? What do you want to cultivate? What do you want to swap out? And we create another level of space of objectivity where we can explore that and we can start to make some of those shifts. So as we're going through those life changes, career changes, all of those things, what is it triggering me? What is it reminding me of? What part of me is feeling like that? Okay, how do I work with that part of me to reconcile that old pain, that grief, that sadness, that fear, that whatever, in order for me to move forward? Because it's all that old stuff that's actually been holding you in the previous life pattern anyway. And in order to move forward and transition and alchemize and transmute, you're going to have to take that past pain and turn it into some positive momentum. One of my quotes that I use quite a lot is, shit is the best fertilizer. And so it's celebrating those things. And yes, some of them are vile. Some of them are horrendous. And I deal with everything from the last words your first girlfriend or boyfriend said to you all the way up to willfully and socially abusive parents that should never have been parents. And I deal with everything in between that stuff with my one-to-one work. And that there's a point in that, though, where you can find the necessary treasure and tension and appreciation because of what it's enabled you to do. Because your life story becomes someone else's survival guide and they get to learn it faster. And perhaps they don't have to do what you did. They don't have to experience the life you've experienced because actually you share it back with them. So they don't have to go through 20 years of drug addiction or abuse or feeling less than, all of these things. Because they see, oh shit, you did that. Oh, fuck it. I'm going to do that when I'm fucking 16 rather than 66. And you're just like, this is what we aim for. We don't have to have people breaking themselves, being crushed, squeezed, pressurized, whatever, abused. Actually, we're just here to kind of go, okay, cool. Let's work on our little corner of the universe, share the wisdom from the reflection of our pain, and enable them to do something different and live an even more incredible life than we live. Because that's the reason why we come here, to evolve and to inspire other people to go beyond us, rather than trying to keep them suppressed and depressed.
Music to my ears and also speaking to my purpose, because that's my purpose in life is using my voice to talk about this stuff that we all go through and that I've gone through and be open about it so that it might prevent others from going in the same way. One of the things you said that's, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff, but one of the things you say is about the lesson being learned and the pattern repeating itself until we learn the lesson. And one of the things that I found is sometimes even when I become conscious that this is the lesson I need to learn because I find myself in the same place again,
yep,
it's not always that easy to learn that lesson.
No. And sometimes we need that sounding board. So most of the time we are sleepwalking awake into another situation again. How we look at it is it's almost like you're walking backwards in a circle with your eyes closed, and we often end up wondering why we've ended up in the same place all over again. Like I say, same person or same relationship, different person, same situation. It's like, oh my God.
And jobs as well. Like I
and
think
jobs.
It happens a lot in jobs.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll make a sideways move or a lateral move or a diagonal move or whatever. And I think it'd be better if I change department and just end up working for something even worse. You jump out the frying pan into the fire. And yeah, the grass is sometimes greener, but maybe they've got a leaky septic tank that lies in the, it's all of that stuff. So when we start to see that, we're going to go, hold on a minute. What do I need to work on for me? But the ego will keep you in that loop because it understands that's the parameters to work on. That's what it's got to play with. It knows how to manage that scenario rather than doing the next step, because it thinks if you go and do that, you will die. If you step out of the cave, you will be eaten by saber-toothed tigers. That part of your brain doesn't know the difference between a saber-toothed tiger in a job interview or a change in relationships. It's just kind of keep things safe and certain. One of my favorite quotes is actually an Adams Family quote. Yeah, it sounds weird when I say that, but it's Morticia Adams, a very wise woman, surprisingly, when you think of kind of the dynamic. But she said, normal is an illusion. What's normal to the spider is chaos to the fly. So we build these constructs of what normal is to keep ourselves safe. And the moment we step out of that, and it might even be a healthier relationship, a healthier dynamic or whatever, but it's so alien, it's chaotic, and we'll do everything we can to kick against it and bring ourselves back into where we were, confined by our own comfort zone, which will expand or contract in direct or relation to where you stand in accordance to it. And that's how we get ourselves caught up in the game. And we have to start breaking that, but lovingly taking it apart and seeing that that habit and behavior is the habit and behavior of a three-year-old, not the adult. And then when we step into that adult, then we can step into that self-leadership and go, what do I need to do right now? I can get myself into therapy. I can get a coach. I can have someone ask me the questions. Because when we're in victim, we don't work in questions. We work in statements. We work in self-affirmation. We work in self-validation. I think Tony Robbins said the brain is a validation machine. No, the traumatized brain is a validation machine. You can't do that. I can't do that. I'm not good enough. What the fuck's wrong with you? Why can't
you
do that?
Who do you think you are to do that?
Who do you think? Yeah. All of these things that validate us staying and support us staying stuck where we are.
Small. Now,
the curious brain, which then moves into coach, is what can you do differently? What expectation are you holding on to? What comes after this? What happens if we look at this? What's the objective? What needs to happen? Or what would you like to happen instead of this? And we start tricking the brain to come out of the limbic system, out of the amygdala and the fight or flight. And we start to trick the neocortex to come back online, and we start to get curious and explore. But the challenge
and
is
braver.
We get braver and we open up and expand. But is the confirmation biases that we hold are super tricky, super slippery. And we're like, oh, like things just happen. And we find ourselves 3 days, 3 years later. And we're like, oh, actually, that was because. And we're like, shitting hell, like you clever fucker. But then that's why we need someone on the outside of it to ask us the question or to kind of explore that with us and with compassion, with curiosity, without judgment.
To bear witness.
To hold that space.
Yeah.
To, you know, they talk about to facilitate.
Yes.
Facile comes from the word to ease, to make easy, and allow someone to find that for themselves or give them a frame of reference. As a coach, as a mentor, in a therapist, what I do is helping people connect the dots that I can see in kind of family relationships. Oh, this is happening. Reminds me of that story that you told me over here. How does, okay, and they're like, oh, yeah. And you're bringing a different perspective to it. So you're bringing that curious brain online. So an alternative can come out. So the adult can show up a bit more. The coach aspect of the psyche can show up a little bit more. And then that way we can break the pattern. Instead of just going around in a circle, it becomes a spiral. And we're going to circle back on stuff over time. But what we're doing is, instead of just hitting it on the same plane, we actually start to kind of change the trajectory. When we start to look at things from different angles, we build a skill set. Oh, there's that part that I couldn't see because I didn't have the capacity to see that, because that would have been too much had I seen it before. So again, we're hitting that challenge point where I now have the skill set to meet this new part of the challenge, to solve this new part of the puzzle in order to move through that. Cool. A little bit more therapy, a little bit more coaching, build another skill set, use what I've already learned, test that in this new environment, new level of complexity, and have someone ask the questions, have someone hold the space. But also, what's really important to me when I work with people, it's making sure that people have got the skill set to do it themselves. With love and respect, I say to people, look, I'm not here to work with you. I don't want to see you. I want to work with you for 12 weeks. And it might be longer than that. It might be the 12 weeks. In the nicest possible way, I don't want to see you after that, because then it means I'm doing something wrong. But I would like you to have some skills where that can hold you moving forward. And if we need to do an extra session in 6 months, 12 months, 18, whatever, that's cool. I would like to give you some of that in order so you can do that for you, not because you're having to see me once a week for the rest of your life. That's not therapy. That's called trauma bonding and codependency. And I'm not into that.
Nathan, that was a phenomenal conversation and I loved it. And I love the sound of your voice. And it's very hypnotic, actually.
Thank you.
So I can't imagine a session with you. Well, I can, because there's something very compassionate about your voice as well. And so if there are people out there that are curious about working with you, where can they find you?
The more formal parts, like professional parts of it, at the moment it's nathansimmonscoaching.com. It's also in the future, near future, it's going to be utopianpeople.com. And that's utopian with an E on the front of it. And that's more about leadership coaching, one-to-one development. For those people that have a bit more spiritual slant on what they do, astrology, group meditation, these sorts of environments, you can find me at spiritmedicine.world.
Yeah, I'll put all of those in the show notes.
Thank you.
And you mentioned LinkedIn at the beginning, so I guess they can find you on LinkedIn.
Yes, 100%. Well. Yeah, Nathan Simmons, the leadership coach.
Fantastic. Nathan, thank you so much for that. It was just such a pleasure to chat to you today. And I could have stayed here for a lot longer.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the paths we traversed on today's episode. If something rang true for you, be sure to let me know. Or maybe you can share this with someone in your life who would benefit from listening too. And if you enjoy helping others, I'd be so grateful if you would leave a review, so that people who might also be curious about their own life beyond the numbers can discover this podcast too.